Hello, and welcome to this inaugural episode of How Are You Holding Up? A mental health podcast by the depressed, for the depressed. I'm Chris.
And I'm Lindsay.
And the first question I want to ask is, Lindsay, how are you holding up?
Actually, I am doing very well today.
That's good. Why is that?
I've had some lovely social interactions in the last few days and haven't been as reclusive as I usually am.
That's fantastic.
And Chris, how are you holding up?
You know, I'm also doing okay, which is really funny. And as you mentioned before we started recording, we both kind of feel like frauds because so before we get started, let's give you a little bit of background on this particular endeavor of ours. We both have been suffering from depression, anxiety, some form or another for, I don't want to say, better part of combined 20 years.
Or more, yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
And we've never found any sort of real permanent release.
Right.
So we figure that there are others out there, like us, who would love to hear that they are not alone. And that we can just kind of get all of this shit that's normally in our heads out of our heads.
Yes, that we can all sit together for a half hour to an hour in the void discussing our void problems.
Yes, our void problems. So, as for my doing, I did a drink and paint last night. That was fun. Didn't get too drunk, which is a positive.
Positive.
And I painted a moon in the shape of an egg because I haven't painted anything in my life.
Delightful.
And so it is currently hanging up in my room off kilter without a frame. So that's a nice little reminder that, you know what? You don't have to do things perfect. It's going to be all right.
Oh, that's nice. That's a nice little story.
It's very uplifting. Yeah.
This week I have been dealing with a lot of disappointments and excitement of building up possible new jobs. And when I found out that I wasn't going to get it, I was luckily with a friend. And so it was handled okay. Oftentimes when I get that bad news hit, I kind of go into my shell and suddenly I'm in my room. It's been 5 days. I haven't showered. I've been playing video games nonstop. I've been sleeping bizarre schedule, usually going to bed when the sun is coming up, and just trying to get all the happy energy that I see in those video games, just soak it into myself.
Just absorb it.
That's right. Just succubi all the way through.
So what's your video game of choice right now that's keeping you afloat?
Right now, I think because of the social aspect, it'd be Fortnite or Overwatch.
Ah, see? That's not a bad choice.
No, because I enjoy talking with other people. It's nice to have people excited to talk to me. And I think a lot of depression for me has felt, well, a lot of my time being depressed, I don't know how to say this, you know, has been just me feeling cut off from people and feeling like people don't like me or they don't want to be around me, which, you know, the lies you tell yourself when you are depressed.
Oh, yeah, of course. For me, it always kind of manifests in I realize that I have also not seen the sun in at least a day or two. I don't necessarily want to, but at the same time, I really, really, really want to. it's being unable to get up and get out of bed and realize that there is a reason to get up and get out of bed,
right,
other than to stuff my face with horrible, horrible food or whatever other self-harm I can impose on myself.
Oh, no.
not self-harm in the cutting myself way, mind you, just in the I'm going to eat a bucket of fried chicken in one sitting.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, we would also like to mention at this point, we are not professionals.
Yes.
We are not therapists. We have not gone to school to help anybody through this. It is literally just us reaching out to you, the listeners.
Mm-hmm. If you have suffered depression at any point in your life, whether it's a mild grade, you know, something that was just kind of cleared up over time, or if you are, like us, essentially permanent sufferers of this particular mental affliction, you are not alone. You are by far not alone. And it is part of our endeavor to reach out and be able to let you know that yeah, those weird little thoughts that you're having, guess what? Here's two of us having those exact same thoughts.
Yeah, it really helped me. I was going through a depression period. I don't know how many days it'd been at this point, maybe weeks. And I just felt that sort of gray, being underwater feeling of nothing's exciting. I don't feel close to anybody right now. I'm never going to be happy. I will never be happy. And I looked up on YouTube just to see what depression videos there might be. And there was this woman who had done a video just recording herself through her day, and she was depressed that day. Mm-hmm. And it was such a release and a relief for me to see somebody else going through that and realizing that these weird things that you don't even realize you're doing them or thinking them, and then you see somebody else doing those things. You're like, oh my gosh, we are doing the same thing. I have a few family members who have never had depression. They've never suffered through it, or if they did, it was circumstantial. It was a shorter period than ongoing year mm-hmm. after year of depression.
Yeah. Now, it's funny. For me, it was always I didn't really suffer it throughout my adolescence. I had an overwhelming amount of, I guess the only way I could put it is self-confidence and an ability to push through those kind of thoughts. It wasn't until I reached actual adulthood that confidence and that ability to just go, no, you're good. It stopped being effective. It stopped being more of you got this or you can make it to can you?
Yeah.
Can you make it through this? Can you handle what's going on? Yeah, so a lot of that really pushed me towards understanding that, no, that underlying feeling that you've had your entire life, that's a deal. That's a problem. That's something you have to face. Welcome.
What sort of negative self-talk do you find that you started doing?
A lot of it comes down for me to don't even bother trying. You've tried in the past. You failed. Why are you still trying? A lot of that is really just, like, for example, I'm currently in the process of another weight loss journey because I have ballooned to the highest weight that I, the most weight that I've had in my entire life. And I have ballooned ultimately over 100 pounds in the last 5 years, back and forth. Yeah. Oh, actually, no, more than 100 pounds. It's been like 180 pounds back and forth. So it is a enormous strain on myself mentally where I just go, you lost this much weight, you could do it again. And then followed it up with, you lost this much weight, you could do it again. And now it's, you lost this much weight, then you fucked it up. Good job. Good job, fucko. So those are the thoughts in my head. How about you?
I think it's the same theme of you've tried this before, it didn't work, or it worked for a little while, and it's not good. A big thing for me, again, is just feeling happy. It's really hard for me to feel happy and content. And I know that people say that happiness is a state of mind and you just have to talk yourself into being happy, or if you meditate enough and you say enough self-love shit, you're gonna feel great. And it doesn't have to do with your income, and it doesn't have to do with whatever. But I just find that I struggle with being like, it's okay, I will feel good again. Things will bring me joy again. I will be proud of myself again. And I think some of it is just I tell myself I'm not going to be successful with what I want, you know, that I'm going to have to compromise in big ways that I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, and of course, some of it, as I think a woman in this day and age in the Hollywood area, you know, looks here is huge. And so anybody who's not incredibly thin or in shape struggles with this, I think. I think it's
sure.
You just don't fall into the beauty that you think you should.
So for this inaugural episode, I know that we want to talk mostly about who we are,
yes,
what we are doing here, mm-hmm. and I feel like part of it is going to have to come down to how and when did you figure out that you were depressed?
Yeah, I was a teenager, and I think a lot of people thought I'd grow out of it because teenagers have a lot of hormones, and I think a lot of kids do. You know, middle school can be real rough. So people thought it would get better. I was told that there's family members that had it and had been diagnosed with it, and so that kind of stuck in my mind. And it, I just started noticing this disconnect of me not engaging with people as much as I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And I know that now I'm an introvert, and I know that has a huge part to play in it, but I just, when I would be with people, I wouldn't feel connected. I would feel like they don't actually want to be around me, et cetera. And I know that some of that's insecurity. Some of that is just bad self-esteem, and that happens when you're in middle school a lot and you're struggling to find your self-identity. But it just continued. I mean, in high school, it was like I would find things that I loved and I was desperately passionate about, and then I would feel nothing.
Yeah.
I would feel nothing, and I wouldn't want to get out of bed, and I wouldn't shower. And then it continued on into college, where I just stopped going to classes, and I just kept failing over and over again. And I got so bad that I couldn't really even leave my apartment because I had so much social anxiety at that point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, how about you?
Well, as I said before, like all throughout middle and high school, I basically like, I just lived to be as extroverted as I possibly fucking could.
Yeah.
So all of my happiness was derived from the happiness that I could give or instill or somehow conjure out of others. Mm. And it was through that that I never really took the time to love myself. Yes. For who I was.
Yeah.
And it was a big, big push later on in life where I had been to therapy when I was about 10 years old. And that was because I lost my dad in a motorcycle accident. So I had to deal with pretty harsh tragedy at an early age. So for me, it wasn't until when I hit adulthood and those feelings didn't go away that I finally sought out other therapy. Mm. And I got my diagnosis when I was maybe like 26, 27.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't until then, yeah, that I was officially diagnosed with depression. And even then, they were at the time just like, no, you're going to be okay. It's depression, but you seem to be handling it with a good degree. It wasn't until like 2 years ago that they were like, oh, you're not handling this at all.
You're not okay. Abort.
Oh my God. Oh, fucking throw pills at him.
Tie him down. Stuff this in his mouth.
Yes. That was...
Be happy.
Oh, just get happy.
That's another episode.
Did you get officially diagnosed?
I did. I was officially diagnosed in, I believe it was high school. Mm. I went to so many therapists.
Oh my God. Why'd you go to so many?
Because, okay, so my family life at a very young age was tumultuous.
Of course.
There was a divorce when I was about 3, mm-hmm. and it was an unhappy, angry situation.
Yeah.
And that just didn't stop. It was continuous. And so one of the reasons I think I went to so many therapists was just because it's hard to find a good one. It's hard to find one that isn't freaking nuts and going to do more damage to you than, like, you know what I mean? So I think we went to a lot. We wanted to get second opinions, etc. I was diagnosed with ADHD and put on Ritalin at, I think, 10th grade.
Wow, that's late for ADHD.
I know, right? And then I think later they just kept upping my medication to the point where until I was a completely different person. And then they're like, nah, you're not. And they took it all away. So that didn't help at all. Yeah, so I got diagnosed. And then I didn't want to be medicated. I really fought that. And then finally, I would say 23, I started getting on anti-anxiety, anti-depression medications.
Do you remember what the first medication they put you on was?
I don't remember. It might have been Lexapro. Mm-hmm. But I know it completely changed my life. At first, great, and then terrible.
Yes.
And then I got remedicated. I stopped. I got off that, and then I got remedicated again, and then the same sort of situation happened. And finally, I thought, you know, I'm just going to not be medicated because I am somebody who, thankfully, doesn't have to be to function at least at some level.
Right.
I'm very fortunate in that I don't think about suicide every day. So I can, with good diet, exercise, and proper socialization, none of those things happen very often, but it's something to work towards. Sounds like a dog, you know, that was like sickly and you adopt from the pound.
I want to just every single time I'm told good diet, exercise. It's like, yeah, I know I did that. Guess how long that lasted?
Also, you probably didn't feel super happy and like, I mean, you felt good about your progress.
I felt great about my progress. I was like, I was in the fucking tops of my life at one point where I was like, I'm 140 pounds and I love everything about myself and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to share that with everybody else. And then all it takes is like one bad day. Yep. This is like... Yep. Straight out of like the Killing Joke kind of bad day. And you can just go, oh, wait, I've been lying to myself this whole time. That's cool beans, man.
And actually, I think those voices are the lie. The ones that are like, you're not worth anything. You actually, you're a fraud.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't do this. You're going to fall right back into it. And then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because you do. You're like, you know what? You're right. I am garbage. I'm going to eat all of these hot Cheetos. Poop fire tomorrow.
yeah, there we go. That sounds like a plan for me.
So how have you tried to combat your depression?
For me, the most effective strategies in terms of like combating depression, hilariously enough, as much as we were shitting on it, exercise helped a whole lot. Exercise legit helped me through like some of the worst of it, where I was just like, I'm just gonna go and I'm going, but there's a reason why, and this is actually more important to the process. When I was exercising on the regular, I was doing it partly for the socialization. It was my extroverted mind finally getting to go, I'm going to go out to a gym. I am going to meet with people that are interested in my health and I am interested in their health, and we will work together and we will better each other, let alone ourselves. And it was being able to do that that made me feel really fucking good. And then I lost that ability because all those motherfuckers disappeared.
Oh, no.
So now it got to a point where as soon as everybody that I knew that was in a similar shape to me or had similar goals to me and... Because it's hard to find a workout partner.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is as hard to find somebody who is just as dedicated as you want to be and is also in the same vein of health as you or slightly above. Like, that would be the better choice, is somebody who is, you know...
Slightly better shape.
Slightly better shape. Because if they're in slightly better shape, they can push you. Mm-hmm. And then you can sit there and go, well, why don't you fucking do it when you're angry? And then
like a relationship.
Like a relationship. Yeah. So, yeah. Here we are, guys. We're telling you the key to a good relationship, find someone better than you.
Yes. I mean, off on a tangent real quick on that, I was told, like, don't date somebody who's from a broken household because you are from a broken household and you have a better chance of making it if they are from a happy home.
Oh.
And to that, I replied, yeah, but then they're boring.
I see. I'm not from a broken home, but my God, I'm fucked up.
I think any kind of broke. I mean, you had tragedy.
Oh, yeah, we had a bunch of tragedy.
That was a lot of trauma for a kid.
It's definitely tragedy in a different degree, but at the same time, it's like, you know, come on, guys.
So for me, for trying to combat it, yeah. I think, exercise is good and everything, but I think when you're in the depression, when you're in the total throes of it and it has taken over your life, trying to give myself little pep talks, really focusing on my self-talk. And it sounds kind of silly and it feels kind of uncomfortable while you're doing it. But if you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, I love you. I am proud of you. You're doing such a good job. And it seems small, but to say that to yourself, and you don't have to look in the mirror, but to be saying those things just even a few times a day, I think can help combat all the thousands of other negative, without even thinking, I mean, you're not even thinking, it's subconscious, these negative forces. And so that, giving myself points for when I do the little things. So, hey, today I actually ate 3 meals.
Yeah.
You know, or I didn't skip something, or hey, I took a shower today, or I made my bed. And if you're really depressed, those things, you know, they take so much energy out of you. And so just to give yourself those little points, I think that helps me. And then definitely disappearing sometimes a little, you know, going into the fantasy of a video game, reading a book, listening to an audiobook.
Yeah. See, whenever I go into any sort of like, I guess, hibernation to a degree, any sort of solo time, that's when all of these negative thoughts for me as an extrovert get worse. The moment that I am not surrounded by people, it's like taking all the guards away and just opening myself to, okay, well, here are all the negative things that are probably being thought of, and let's go ahead and, oh wait, let's not make them probably anymore. Let's make them definitely thought of. So I am thinking these horrible thoughts about myself. Cool for me.
And as an extrovert, I think you get energy from being in those kind of situations where you're surrounded by people. And it's just so that it's taking, being alone is taking away that energy from you and that stimulation for your brain that you need. And then on top of it, having the depression just be eating away at you. And so then you don't want to go out.
No, you don't want to go out. Or if you do go out, then you're suddenly... people will notice.
Yeah.
Always notice.
No.
They might not say anything.
But they'll treat you
that mean. But I mean, you'll get that sensation of like, oh wait, no, they do know. Yeah. I'm making myself a little too obvious right now. Better pull the mask on tighter.
So speaking of those kind of things, how can you tell it's coming? Did we talk about that yet?
No, we have not.
Okay.
Honestly, for me, I feel like I notice that it's coming when I start... This is going to be fucking funny. I notice it's coming when I start listening to certain music or I start watching certain shows.
Oh.
It's weird because I have this very, very select few groups of songs that are like, this song is going to very distinctly remind me of a very bad time in my life. Let's dig that up and we'll play that on loop for a good hour. And then I can sit there and dwell in those memories while I'm listening to this song over and over again. And, or I'll watch this show that I remember watching when I was in the middle of a breakup. And those are the memories that are coming full force into my brain.
Oh man.
It's just basically another form of self-torture.
Yeah.
You fall into it and you're like, no, I'm comfortable here. But what about you? Is there some sort of trigger for you, or is it more of like a, I know that I'm going to just fuck up?
Yeah, I do have triggers for it, I think. But then the more subtle ones are the ones with the I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm going this way. And how I can tell when that's starting to happen is when I stop responding to text messages. Mm. And I stop trying to be on top of that. My room starts... It's when you're depressed or you're starting to go into your depression, you stop seeing things the same way. And I stop seeing the mess in my room. So things just start to kind of collect like clothes and water cups around me. And then one day I walk into my room and it's like, holy shit, this is my brain. This is literally a physical manifestation of my brain. Yeah, that's definitely a big one. And then also the late night binge eating garbage food.
I also do my environment is a reflection of my brain.
Yeah.
My car. It's not my room. It's my car.
It's your car.
I spend so much time in my friggin' car that as my car gets dirtier and dirtier and more cluttered inside, I know that my brain is running a million miles an hour that it just sees this, like, there's like a fast food bag in the back seat and I just go, yeah, I'll get to that.
Yeah, exactly. it's almost like this. It's like watching a car accident or something happen, or like driving by one and rubbernecking. It's, you want to see how bad it's gonna get.
Sure.
It becomes a sort of weird. Yeah, you're in a messy room. You know what? Just leave those dirty clothes on the ground right there. Fuck it. You're disgusting. You're foul. Now go play video games.
Yeah. play Stardew Valley, clean up your farm.
Yeah, right. Man, if I exercised even a third of as much as my characters do running around, I would be such a babe.
Oh my god.
Oh, another sign that I am depressed is all of those nasty, horrible things my ex-boyfriends have said to me, or people who were horrible to me, those come back and become my self-talk.
Ooh.
You're not my body type. You're not going to be financially successful, and I don't want to be your sugar daddy. You are disgusting. You know, I don't know. I don't actually even remember all the things. But just then, and then I translate those into you're disgusting, you're unlovable, you... are too much for people. You're too sensitive. I got told I'm too sensitive by a parent forever.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is an interesting thing, because when you talk to yourself that way, do you hear it in your voice, or do you auditorily hear it in other people's voices?
That's really interesting. I think it's a mix of both.
It's a mix of both. Because for me, it's a guarantee. It's always my voice.
Wow.
I've heard many a things from other relationships I've had or friends that I've been with. And those thoughts, you know, that sort of negative talk where it actually sticks with you.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times for me, I can brush off shit talking. I can always brush off shit talking. But I can't brush off genuine criticism sometimes.
Especially from someone who loves you or you love.
Yes, especially when it's someone you love. And at that point, I don't hear it in their voice anymore. It's now, no, that's a reality. The reality is what has just been said to you by this person whose thoughts and opinions you know and trust.
Yeah.
So at that point, you definitely, I mean, for me at least, I definitely adopt any sort of negative thought like that as truth.
I think actually the more that I think about it, the longer... So in the beginning, it'll be their voice. Like when it's fresh, maybe the first few months after someone says something like that. And then it does start to become my voice. You're right. It does. Or I'll be like, I'll do something or I won't do something and I'll feel bad about myself. And then I'm like, yeah, you're just like that person said. And then I'll say it to myself in my voice.
Yep.
You're never going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or whatever. Yeah.
So... We talked about being diagnosed, and we talked about, you know, being in so much therapy and whatnot, and trying medication, but ultimately, now you are unmedicated.
Right.
You're going to therapy.
Yes.
Yeah. How is your recent bout with therapy been treating you?
So, I went to a therapist for a while who I wasn't getting along with. This was about 3 years ago, and some mid-20s. And then she basically told me she couldn't help me, but she did know somebody who could. And she thought that I had PTSD and that I should be treated as such. So I went to this woman who was lovely, and we did some EMDR sessions, which I can't remember what EMDR stands for. Basically, it's something that you... It's an eye movement or a light that you follow or a vibration in each of your hands that goes from one hand to the other. And you recall something or a memory that was super traumatic. And then you go through it with this other sensation going on. And it's supposed to decrease the trauma, basically. So I can think about those things and be like, that was a bad situation, instead of thinking of those things and being instantly in flight or fight.
Right. For the record, through a Google search, EMDR is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Yes.
That is an incredibly effective. Yeah, it's an incredibly effective form of therapy, though.
I think a lot of people don't realize they have traumas, because when they think of trauma, they think of a violent rape or war.
Sure.
Or something really horrific. And it can be something that seems to you smaller. So if you were a young child and you read a book and it was about somebody who breaks into a house, and suddenly you feel like someone's going to break into your house, and it's real. It's a real thing that you were experiencing. Basically, trauma is just feeling like your life is in danger or being in danger. So a lot of things can happen to a young person and it never be treated, and you don't know why you react to certain things throughout your life so strongly. It's because you have PTSD. So I went to her and we went through some of the worst parts for me, and it changed my life. And now I still go to her almost weekly, just because it's nice to have a third party to kind of
reorganize your thoughts,
you know, and see your growth and and work on the things that to make yourself a better and stronger person.
Right. Absolutely. Like, so I talked about being in therapy when I was like 10, dealing with the trauma of loss and whatnot. And for the longest time, it wasn't really hitting me what exactly it was that I was suffering through. Because at the time, I was just like, I'm angry about everything. And I'm so disappointed in this, that, and the other thing. Mm. And like, and I couldn't be alone. That was the worst of it, was the abandonment. The fear of abandonment was so incredibly strong with me. It's still something I suffer with to this day. And as a result, like, I eventually started doing CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is basically a fancy way of saying taking your thoughts and reprogramming them so that you sit there and go, okay, this is the thought I'm having. Why am I having that thought? Is there evidence to support this thought? No? Okay, stop having that thought. Which you would think would be useful. It is. It actually is. I'm not shitting on this one. But now I was seeing a therapist for a little while, and then schedules just weren't working. And so I was therapy-less for a good, I want to say 4 or 5 months, maybe 6 months. And it finally hit me again where I was like, nope, I need somebody to get the cobwebs out of my brain a little bit. And I started using BetterHelp.com, an online therapy broker. Not a sponsor. And I started using them, and for a while there, they were doing great. Like, they are basically like a kind of pen pal therapist, as opposed to a, like, sit down and talk with them, though you could schedule like a half hour session with the therapist, and it's covered by the monthly cost or whatever. So it was useful for me for a while, and now I'm back in that state of, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
So I'm back on the mend of, I don't want a therapist at the moment, just because.
I have not been back to my therapist. It's been about a month since I saw her. And that, it started off with the scheduling. It just wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Then family comes to visit. And I do notice a difference when I don't go to her for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But finding a therapist when you're really depressed, finding a therapist who is willing to take a phone call,
yes,
or a text message conversation or a Skype call and in person is amazing. I've had a couple times where I've had a total breakdown, and it was at night. Night is really hard for me, I think, especially after breakups.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we would talk and she would like text me. She didn't charge me for it. I mean, that makes me feel like she actually cares about me as opposed to, you are just a paycheck for me. You know, a lot of therapists are very, we talk in the session and you feel so close, and then suddenly, okay, so money and hat, you know, and finding someone who makes you feel like you're connecting and they're listening and they do care about you. I think that's really important, because you're so hard on yourself when you're depressed.
Yep.
You don't need to be around other people who make you feel bad or less than or a commodity or whatever.
If you surround yourself with people who are going to make you feel less than yourself, that's not people you should be spending time with. And it just sucks that a lot of the times, for a lot of people, family is that.
Yeah.
Family is definitely the biggest trigger for so many people. And it's upsetting on a multitude of levels. But ultimately, they're not the ones who have to live with their choices or their decisions, or even our choices or decisions. They may have to kind of deal with it in a degree, but how often have you been told to just deal with it?
Right. Or, hey, if you just do this, you'll feel better.
Yeah.
If you just clean up your room, if you just go out on that extra walk, and sometimes they're right.
Sure.
Sometimes. But a lot of times, like, could you just fucking not? I'm just depressed.
Yeah, that's honestly, like, that would be a great name for a therapy book. Could you just fucking not?
Yeah, right. So do we want to talk more about our experiences with and being on medication and what it was like being diagnosed?
Absolutely.
Great. So how was your experience being diagnosed? What did that look like?
For me, it was actually different than most folks because I... Well, let me take that back. I was diagnosed through a combination of the therapist that I was seeing in person and my medical doctor.
Okay.
My medical doctor noticed my weight gain and I told him, like, I don't think I'm doing okay right now. Like, I don't feel emotionally great.
At this point, you didn't know you were depressed.
At this point, I was not diagnosed with depression.
Okay.
And so he said, all right, well, let's try you on some Lexapro. And I was like, okay. He said, I'm going to put you on 10 milligrams.
Okay.
It's like the standard beginning dose. Try it for a month. See how you're feeling. And after that first month, I felt great.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so fucking good. It was amazing. And I felt good enough where I didn't have the racing thoughts. I didn't have to sit there in silence for 5 minutes so I could make that final decision of just, okay, what am I going to do right now? Let me just everything else in my brain shut up so I can make this friggin' decision. It was just, I make a decision. Done. Oh, what do I want to do right now? I want to do this. Awesome. And that was great.
Yeah.
Until I realized the reason why I was able to make those decisions so quickly was because there was nothing else. I was able to make those decisions so quickly because there was a flat line where my emotional section of my brain was. There were no ups, there were no downs, there was very little excitement, there was very little joy or sorrow. There was just existence. Which was such a change of pace for me that it felt great.
Yeah.
For, like, I want to say the better part of a year.
Yeah.
I am pretty much freshly off Lexapro. Like, it is my first month being off of it.
Oh, this is a timely podcast for you.
This is a very timely podcast for me. Because as of last month, I want to say, I had stopped taking it. And I did the stupid thing, which was just cold turkey, just quitting.
Yeah, been there.
Yep. And it's highly, highly not recommended.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah. If you're out there and you're like, hey, I want to quit taking meds, don't do that.
Don't. You need to, taper off.
Wean yourself off. Like, there's a reason the doctors tell you to do it. It's because it's actually the right thing to do. So, in my doing it, I did, as soon as I was a week off, and I was like, I should contact my doctor and tell him that I have done this very stupid thing.
Yes.
And so I did. I made an appointment. He checked in with me, and he said, all right, how are you feeling? Are you getting headaches? Are you getting nausea? Are there any side effects to your essentially detoxing right now? And I was like, I'm feeling okay. Like, I'm not feeling any ill effects from it. He says, well, It'll come. it sort of came, I think. I felt dizzy. I felt lightheaded, but that was the worst I got.
That's nice.
I lucked out.
You lucked out.
I seriously lucked out.
I was not so lucky.
Really? Yeah. When you quit cold turkey?
Yeah.
Was it the Lexapro you quit cold turkey, or was it something else?
I don't remember. Uh-huh. I apologize. I guess I could go back in and we could redo this. But
No. There's no need for specifics.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't remember the dosage, and I don't remember what I was taking. I remember basically what had happened at that point was I was living with a boyfriend, and we just weren't doing much of anything, and I was just heavily medicated. And I realized there was a problem when, A, I couldn't get any sort of sexual arousement at all. Like, I just had no interest in being intimate with somebody physically, which is a huge part of any relationship.
It is.
And just, I think, self-identity. Also, I'm a very creative person. That's my life, is doing theater and music, and I mean, that's just what I have had my whole life, and I'm good at it. One of the few things I'm good at, not so good at math. Wish I was. But, so when I stopped being able to literally do anything creative,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I just couldn't even come up with a story idea. I could, whereas right now I could tell you 10 different random story ideas or sit down at the piano and play you a song.
Sweet.
but I couldn't, I couldn't touch that muse, the flow of artistic, creative river. So I decided, and I realized the living situation I was in was not good. It was pretty toxic. We were living with a family of people who, some were ex-cons, some were on drugs, and I just was letting things go that I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
It
probably came from that numbness.
It was numb. Like, you just don't have highs. Again, with me the same way. In the beginning, I was so happy. I was so happy not to be anxious, not to get nervous. I could just walk down the street and feel great and want to be happy to see people. And there wasn't this weight and fear crushing me that is ever present in my life. It's become such a companion that I forget what it's like to be without it. But So going back to when I was deciding to go off of it. So I thought, hey, I'll wean myself off by myself, because they were capsules. So I would like open the capsule and fill half of the capsule and then just take that. I did that for, I don't know, 2 days. And then I was like, okay, I've been weaned. And I went off.
I've been weaned.
I've been weaned. I am weaned. So this is what happened. All of those feelings for the last few years that had been suppressed suddenly came back, and I had horrific bouts of rage. I mean, the kind of rage where you are throwing things at somebody, hitting people. And I am not a violent person. I am a pretty even keel in that way, in that regard, person. So that was scary, and it was uncontrollable. And I had brain zaps where it felt like an electrical impulse would zap through my brain like lightning. And it was so I didn't know what those were. I had no idea what I was experiencing, or that was normal for somebody who was too quickly going off their antidepressants. It's scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you remember how many medications you had been on at that point?
I was on in total, or
like
just
total, like, because that at that point you would have been on at least like a couple probably antidepressants before, weaned off of those, moved on to the next one.
Exactly, that's what happens. Because what they do, if you haven't been medicated, or if you have, you'll know what we're talking about. You test out different medications because the doctors don't know what's going to work with your chemistry.
No,
and what ends up happening is you're like a guinea pig, and it gets really weird and uncomfortable, and it changes you, and you're like, you know, I don't really quite feel right on this medication. I just keep finding myself staring off into the distance. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's not for you. Or you get nauseous, so nauseous you can't eat for a while, and then it doesn't go away. You just switch.
As a comparison, imagine that you are taking your car to the mechanic. The mechanic is blind and deaf and decides that what they're going to do is poke around under the hood for a while, and if they find something that just doesn't feel right, maybe they'll switch it out for another part. Do they know if this part is the part they need? No, they're blind and deaf. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. So they will just take the idea of, well, this is normally hot, so let's put something hot there. And there you go. Fixed.
Yep. And you're supposed to keep a journal to, like, be able to go back and discuss this with your doctor about how you're doing. It's really messed up. And I was in college at the time. So it was like, and I get brain zaps also when I go on meds.
But you were also from a psychiatrist, right?
I had two different times. Yeah, one was a psychiatrist, one was just the doctor / therapist duo. Okay.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So the general practitioner / therapy combo is honestly, as far as I'm aware, like the least recommended.
Yeah, don't do that.
The psychiatry method, while given a lot of like negative feels, because psychiatrists are more of just pill pushers in the minds of a lot of people. They are.
But they are. I walked into this guy's office. He said, what's wrong? I said, I think I'm depressed. He said, here's this medication. Take it.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah. That's a shitty psychiatrist.
Yeah.
That's a straight up shitty psychiatrist. So it's difficult to find, especially when you're having to try out so many different things and do all the different hoops to jump through for mental health.
Yeah.
And this is just for depression.
Just for depression.
Let alone forget about anxiety, forget about PTSD, forget about borderline, forget about any other sort of mental health issue.
Schizophrenia.
Like, these are all so incredibly misunderstood and Wrongfully diagnosed. I would definitely say wrongfully diagnosed on a lot of folks. Like, the difference between borderline disorder and bipolar, for example.
Yeah.
It's such a bizarrely, subjectively thin line, depending on the therapist.
Yeah.
Or your prescribing doctor, or whatever it is. It changes everything. Speaking of changing everything, If you haven't gathered yet, this podcast is going to be about talking about these kind of things out in the open. We have long found that our inability to express ourselves, what we're going through, it's such a deterrent, because socially, this is not acceptable conversation to be having in just general circles. We're hoping that through this podcast, through even just talking about this, just the two of us, we can start tearing down those walls of being able to accept that mental illness is just physical illness, but invisible. That's all it is. It's an invisible physical illness.
Yeah. And we'd like to create a community and a dialogue and just a place to go when you're feeling kind of blue.
And I mean, we're loath to use the phrase safe space because it has such a negative connotation now. But really, this is a safe place.
Yeah.
This is a safe place for you to come and talk with us if you want to. Check us out on our Facebook, on our Twitter. It's all Hey Who Podcast, all one word. That's the Twitter and Instagram and also the Facebook page. There's also, if you want to just contact us directly, it's heywhopodcast@gmail.com. And we would like to leave you this week with something positive.
Yeah, if you're having a rough time this week, first of all, I want you to know that you're not alone, that millions of other people are going through the same thing you are or something similar. And I think it'd be interesting to hear about what other people experience when they're depressed, the weird things they do. But yeah, we'd like to leave you with something to look forward to at the end of each of our podcasts to watch or read about during your week. And this week, I am going to recommend for me, I enjoy reading, it's called Ava's Demon. It's an online comic. It's free. It's beautiful art, and it's something to just kind of dive into. Ava, spelled A-V-A, Ava's Demon.
And that's it for this week.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And by the way,
don't tell us to just get over it.